Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, I'm David Martos. We're in Seville, in Spain, where the 31st edition of the European Film Awards Gala is taking place tonight. And we're talking to director, writer, and leading actor of The Happy Prince, Rupert Everett. Mr. Everett, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
My first question is, this happens with everything, with politics, with society, with rights, the sense of being European. Do you think that you are a European filmmaker? Do you feel like that?
Well, it's very peculiar and strange. Since all my life, professional life really, I have striven towards being European. In the early 80s, people said that the European cinema was going to be unveiled in 1989. And I decided not to go to live in Los Angeles like all the other English actors, but I thought I'd go and live in France and learn French and Italian and start working there and try and get into European cinema and be a kind of European actor. The thing that didn't really happen in 1989 was that European cinema never managed to find its communal language in a way. It seemed to me there were three main players, the French business, the Italian business, and then the German business, sort of. And none of them really got along with each other. The French thought they were much better than everybody else. They didn't like the Italians because the Italians didn't shoot sound. The Italians didn't like the French because of various things. Nobody seemed to like the Germans very much. And so you'd find yourself doing films quite often, amazing films where a Yugoslavian actor would be speaking in Yugoslavian, the English actor would be speaking in English, and somehow after that, and these all kind of really centered out of Italy because they didn't really have a relationship with natural sound. They still don't have such a relationship with natural sound as the rest of us do. And so, in one sense, it was very difficult to find out how to make a film that we could all enjoy together in the same version, because I feel finally making my film that my film is a really essentially European film. It speaks in three European languages. It's financed around Europe. It's starring European actors. It's produced by Europeans, and it's applicable. Wild is a name known around throughout Europe. But I think nobody noticed, really. I feel sad about that. And also extraordinary, considering now I am about not to be a European. So it's very peculiar. The whole thing is very, very, very strange and depressing.
You feel depressed about all the Brexit debate?
I feel very, very depressed about the Brexit debate, of course. First and foremost, because I feel passionately European. It's such a long thing, but I don't even see what the English... Everybody's become so obsessed, the Europeans and the English, about really blocking each other at this point. And it seems that we still ignore, through all of this, the whole spiritual side of everything. You know, it's all about economy and backstops and everyone turning on everyone else. You know, everything gets more and more unpleasant, really, if you think about it. Because, for example, the Irish Prime Minister attacking us at this point so much when in the 2000 and in the big crash, England really was the first country to go into Ireland and gave them tons and tons of money. So it's very upsetting. I mean, understandable, but upsetting to have Mr. V attack us now at this point so much. So the whole thing is just unraveling into more and more trouble. I think by the end, when history looks back on the whole thing, one of the people who will be very much to blame is Jean-Claude Juncker, because the community itself is too intransigent, I think, in terms of all the issues that all the countries are having. They were too intransigent with Greece. They're now at loggerheads with Italy. The community, I think, needs to be like a mother rather than like an unfucked aunt.
Well, we live in a very difficult century because the secret looks like unity in the diversity, which is really difficult to manage, right? We should be united in Europe, in filmmaking too, but respecting and having in mind our diversity.
Yes, we should be united. I feel united. I love being European. I love my relationship with Europe. Making my film in Germany was an incredibly wonderful experience, being financed.
So what about becoming a director yourself? Was it a thing that you were looking for, like, for many years, or was it the right story that pushed it forward?
I wasn't looking to be a director at all. Just nobody else would direct my film when I wrote it. And I spent 2 or 3 years trying to find another director. And after 3 years of very slowly getting people to answer, one of the things in our business is that nobody replies to you about anything. This is the new virtual world. People only contact you when they need something. As soon as people don't need something, you can't. Everything becomes a brick wall. And so the first 2.5 years I spent after I wrote my script, I spent trying to find a director. And the agencies become these fortresses that you really can't get near. And so after 3 years, I'd approached about 7 directors that I wanted and managed to get finally a no out of all of them. And I thought, my God, this is going to go on forever, or could go on forever. And the type of director I wanted, you know, had a lot of projects of their own that they were trying to get together. So I wasn't being successful. And I thought I would actually just make the film myself. But it wasn't really because I'd ever dreamt of being a director. It was because a script is dead if it doesn't get made. And I refused to let myself fall into that, dead category.
It's like a mold of a sculpture, right? If you have a mold, you don't have a sculpture.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which tools would you say that you gathered from the directors that directed you in the past in order to become a director yourself? I mean, did you think of specific things that other directors did to you or did with you in order to do your film?
Well, I suppose, you know, working in film for so long, particularly in the early years of when I started, film was a very slow it happened very slowly. So the actors, you sat around a long time and you really did get an opportunity, if you wanted it, to learn every aspect of the filmmaking because, you know, you only did 5 or 6 setups per day, maybe 9 setups a day, and each one of them took 2 hours or 3 hours sometimes to set up. Nothing happened that quickly. So you really had a chance to learn technically what cinema was about. And I think that, for me, was very, very useful. When I came to work in Europe and live in France, I worked a lot in Italy and came across all these giants of the Italian cinema, from Francesco Rosi to designers like Danilo Donati, to costume designer like Piero Tosi. I don't know whether these names mean anything to you, but they're gods of Gianni Quaranta design. And I got to see how, not that I ever met Visconti or was around for De Sica, but I got to see how the texture of those deeply detailed aesthetics were made. And I loved them. I loved that side of things. I loved. And I think if I'd gone into another side of the business, I would have definitely tried to go into costume. And I made friends with all and worked with all the kind of proteges of Piero Tosi, I always had that in my mind. When I was making my film, the people who'd inspired me most really were the Dardenne brothers, in a way, and also to see what Andrea Arnold did on, because she kind of used the Dardenne brothers as her prototype for some of her films, and she made them slightly more exotic visually. And I thought, God, it would be amazing to apply that modus operandi to the conventional biopic, which normally is quite traditionally made, and I didn't want to make a film like that. So I think it was, so they were very much part of my inspiration. And then, of course, I suppose Sergio Leone and the way he uses flashback a lot. I love flashbacks. And so that's really kind of what... Those are the references I had, really.
And how did it feel directing your own peers? I don't know if you understood any reactions in directors that directed you in the past when you were directing your own peers.
I understood everything, I think, about all actors like directors to stay away, on the whole, or at least all the ones I know. People, the directors nobody likes are the micromanagers, the people who are sitting in your face nonstop, trying to micromanage every line reading, and that for me, most actors don't like that. The work you do really as a director with a good actor is casting him, and once you've cast him, if he's a good actor, he should be able to expand in the role himself. And I had really wonderful actors. I think I was very lucky in that sense to have such overqualified actors, even in very small parts, actually. So there wasn't anyone that I had to create their performance with them. They all knew exactly what they were going to do.
Okay, and how involved were you in the editing room? Did you suffer much?
Well, suffered because we ran out of money, so the edit was obviously shorter than it was, truncated and harder than it needed to have been. But I was obviously there all the time.
Okay, Mr. Everett, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
This was an interview from Seville. I'm David Martos, and this is Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.